Welcome to this episode of GPLI Radio, where we engage in spirited conversation with experts in the areas of contact lenses and eye care that need talked about. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Quinn, Associate Director of the GP Lens Institute. Let's jump in with today's guest. Please welcome Dr. Stephanie Wu. Dr. Wu is a graduate of the Southern California College of Optometry. She completed her residency in cornea and contact lenses at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, under Dr. Ed Bennett. In 2022, she was a recipient of the GPLI Practitioner of the Year Award. She's the brains behind Wu University, otherwise known as Wu U. The owner of Contact Lens Institute of Nevada, a specialty contact lens only practice, a mother, a wife, a wine sommelier, so many hats you wear, Stephanie. So great to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. I'm excited to be here and excited to chat with you.
Thank you. I'm particularly excited you're here because of your specialty only practice. Because if anyone knows about utilizing consultants, I figured it's you. So thank you for agreeing to talk with me. Let me start right off with, how often do you use your lab partner's fitting consultants?
So I use them every single day. I know that you did a big survey on how often people are using them. And I definitely know that I am one of the people that said that I use them every single day. And I am always a proponent every time I lecture or anytime I am talking to a doctor about specialty lenses. I'm a huge proponent of using your lab consultants. And I think it's just so, so important to utilize their skills and their amazing experiences.
You're referring to the GPLI's advisory board survey from April of 2024. And in that survey of 113 respondents, we did have 18 practitioners say they use their consultants daily. But on average, 14% of specialty lens patients involve a consultant call. So that's going to be fun to talk about. Let me back up a little bit and say that when you request to speak with a consultant, do you talk to whomever's available or do you request particular consultants?
Me particularly, I like to request a specific one. And it's because I develop a relationship with certain consultants and they kind of know the fitting process that I have. And then if I have a very complex patient, then it's like I'm talking to the same person over and over again, instead of trying to get the next person caught up from what we talked about from the last fitting. So I like to have the same person that I use, or maybe two people from each company that I can kind of rely on. But sometimes it gets busy and, you know, those people may not be available and maybe I only have an hour left at the clinic and I really need somebody. So in those particular cases, I'll just take whoever is available.
So you bring up an interesting topic. Part of that survey that we did in 2024, we asked advisory board members to rank the importance of certain features of their labs, and consultant availability was second only to product quality. So availability of consultants is very important. Then it makes total sense to me, Stephanie, that we would have a relationship. It's similar to our patients that come to us. When they come to see us, they want to see us. They don't want to see what other doctor may happen to be in our practice that day. They trust us. There's a relationship, just as you stated. Let me ask you this. Do you schedule a time to reach out to your lab consultant, or do you do it when you get a chance between patients? How do you do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think this is always very important for people that have super busy schedules. And what I would recommend is I forget things immediately. So I need to do it as soon as the patient is finished. So what I usually would do is, let's say I saw a patient for a fitting, I would start a draft email to the consultant and say, "Hello, Joe, and I have this patient so-and-so. These are the findings. These are the things I need help with." And then I would attach any particular information, maybe the K's, maybe the over-refraction, maybe some photos and videos of the actual fit, maybe some OCT imaging, whatever you have, the more information, the better is what the lab consultants always tell me. So I would send as much stuff as I can and get that off and then go see the next patient. Now, I know a lot of other doctors, they kind of do all of their consultations at the end of the day. They'll kind of block off some time, at, you know, 30 minutes or something, and then just get all of those phone calls done or emails or however they're communicating. Particularly for me, because my memory is like, once I'm done, I have to move on to the next thing. And now I've forgotten who, the patient that I saw 20 patients ago. So I like to do it right away.
I've talked to some consultants, and one of the beefs they have is that doctors will call and they're not organized in presenting their information. So if you're doing it, you know, right after you see the patient, how do you have time to be organized? Do you follow the same script every time, or how do you do that?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I would say that I basically have the same things that I always put in the email: our account number, patient's name, date of birth, you know, diagnosis, just maybe a little bit of history. It doesn't have to be complex, maybe just a sentence or two of why they're here and what their goals are. And then I just put their topography. I always attach photos and videos of the fitting. I always attach OCT images if I can, my over-refraction, and then kind of an explanation. It doesn't have to be long, but I can say, here was the over-refraction, their central clearance, if it's a scleral lens, was 600 microns. I would like to decrease that to 300 or whatever you're wanting to do. So I would just kind of say a few things, or if I have a question on what do you think about the edge temporally and help me design a lens. So again, I think just putting as much information as you can. And I think that the consultants, they really kind of want to see the same information over and over again, as much as you can in detail. And that will give them the best possible jumpstart to helping kind of design or help you with a specialty lens fit.
You know what this is reminding me of is a book by Atul Gawande, a thoracic surgeon in Boston, who wrote a book called The Checklist Manifesto. And he talked about having a checklist of everything he does in surgery. And as long as he follows that checklist, he's less likely to leave random sponges in people's abdomen and his outcomes are better. So you're kind of saying that you just have a checklist in your mind. In fact, maybe some practitioners, what do you think of this idea, may want to actually have a form that they use, and they can just plug and chug into that form like a saved Word document. And they can, I don't know the technology well enough that maybe there's other easier to use formats, but that's
yes. And Tom, I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of labs actually have that. They have like a web page where you just go on, plug in the information, plug and chug, and that way you don't miss anything. If, you know, some, and again, yeah, sometimes you get busy and you forget, oh shoot, I forgot to put the over refraction. That's essential for the consultant to design the lens. So if you have that in a form, and I know a lot of companies, they will actually give you something if you don't want to do it on the internet or whatever, you can actually fill it out. They have like a printed one that you just, again, they've got it written out. You just plug in, chug, and then fax it over to them, or what, however you want to communicate with them. So yeah, plug and chug systems or some sort of a checklist, like you said, I think is really, really helpful.
I'm chuckling at myself because you can have all those forms that kind of help lead you to water. But then I have a number of consultants I've talked to who say that simple things like names get misspelled. And so then when they go to look up that chart, they can't find it because the original is misspelled. So just make sure you pay attention to detail like that's important. So we've already talked about a couple different ways to communicate with your consultants. You mentioned email, you mentioned an online form, there's the phone, there's live chat, video conferencing. Do you use any of the other formats, or are you primarily email works for you and you stick with that?
Yeah, so when I was a resident, most of my consults were done by phone. So I would always call the consultant, but I think it's because I was kind of following in the footsteps of the resident prior to me. And I think it was really good for me to kind of get comfortable with calling the lab, talking to the different consultants, calling different labs, speaking to different consultants, and just understanding the processes. But then in real life practice, because I was seeing patients so quickly, then I needed something more instant where I could just get it off and then not have to worry about it. And, you know, maybe the consultant wasn't available or they would have to call me back because they're in a different time zone than I am. So some of those things kind of came into play when I actually started practicing. And then the fax thing, that just didn't work out because, as you know, Tom, faxes, sometimes they just get lost in thin air. So I am just that mindset of once I send the fax off, I kind of forgot about it. And then 2 weeks later, I'd be like, oh, that's weird. Like, did they ever get it? And then I would email them and they say, oh, we never got anything. And so I just stopped doing the whole fax thing. But some people, it works great. So, you know, but for me, email, it's like I always have a track record. I can see if I sent it. I can see when I sent it. I can see if somebody responded, or if they haven't responded in a couple of days, then resend it, make sure they got it. So for me, email works the best. Plus, I can kind of attach photos and videos, whereas on the phone, sometimes I'm trying to describe what I'm seeing, and I find it so much more effective if I can share a photo or a video with the consultant so they are seeing exactly what I'm seeing. Because as you know, if you're trying to describe a fluorescein pattern from a bi-toric GP lens, the way you're describing it might be totally different than what the consultant might envision in their head. So actually looking at the same thing has solved a tremendous amount of problems.
Well, let's talk about how you capture images. And do you have a preference for still images versus video? Do you always do both, or how do you decide about that?
Well, I always prefer video if I can, because I just think a dynamic eye is always going to show you more of what's happening, especially for corneal GP lenses, because when I just take a photo, that's just in 1 second of time. And sometimes I'm taking the eyelids away and just kind of showing the lens fit, but the eyelids are important to the fit of the lens sometimes. So when I have a video, I can show the consultant, here's what it looks like without fluorescein, with the eyelids and the patient's naturally blinking, and then pulling the eyelids away. So it's like they can see everything that they would possibly want to see with that lens. And so I love sending video if I can. If you just don't have that capability, a photo is so much better than nothing. I really think describing things in words is difficult because, again, everybody interprets it a little bit differently. So even just having one image, and you don't even have to have a slit lamp camera or video. Like I used to just do it through my cell phone and just put it into the ocular piece. If I was doing a fluorescein, I would have my staff hold the Rattan filter with some fluorescein and do it that way. There's just so many different ways you can do it, even if you don't have the technology, but just one photo will help your consultant so much.
Yeah. So, I mean, high-tech technology does help, but it's not absolutely necessary. Exactly. If you got an old Burton lamp and you put fluorescein in and light it up, and then just with your standing back with your camera, your iPhone or whatever, take an image and send that works as well. In terms of who calls the consultant, or if who, not necessarily calls, who communicates with the lab? I know a lot of practitioners that are very business minded, and I know you have an exquisitely brilliant business mind, but I know a lot of our colleagues that are business minded, they think I'm the producer, so I'm going to do only doctor stuff, and calling the consultant is going to be delegated to a staff member. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah. And Tom, I think that there's no right answer because everybody's practices are different. Me particular, I like to talk to the consultants myself. And I think it's because even with the best staff member, they're not as trained in things that I've seen over the years just from dealing with so many patients. So I can tell the consultant exactly what I'm seeing, or maybe what I've tried before, or maybe the diagnosis is something really complicated that maybe the technician has never heard of. And then they would get in this situation with a consultant and they don't even know what they're talking about. And so I, in particular, like to talk to the consultants myself. Not that you can't have a staff member assist you, especially in maybe more simple cases, but I'm just of the mindset of, I think it's just easier and you kind of get to the end point a bit faster when the doctor is communicating with the consultant. And that's maybe just for my practice. There's probably practices out there that have incredible contact lens technicians, and that's totally fine. In my practice, I don't have anybody that's like certified to that level. So I really kind of take it upon myself to communicate with the consultants.
Preparation for this conversation, I did reach out to a number of our CLMA lab friends and consultant teams. And one of the challenges they reported to me is that they sometimes do get calls from staff members who are not appropriately trained, and that leads to a lot of problems. So their recommendation was to do what you're doing, which is you, the doctor, you and the primary fitter, be the one that reaches out to the consultant. So that was what our industry friends are hoping we will do. Speaking of which, one thing that they mentioned when I surveyed them was that a lot of times people are not doing over refractions on fits on eye. In fact, if they're doing anything, sometimes they're doing an auto refraction. How important is an over-refraction, and is an auto-refraction an adequate substitute?
Great question, Tom. And I do over-refraction on 100% of my patients. I never, ever rely on the auto refractor. I could see why doctors would do that because it's super simple. Staff member can do it. And then you order the first lens. But I think what happens is because an auto refractor is so different than what you're going to get on an actual over refraction, you're really putting yourself at a disadvantage because the first lens is usually very off. So now you're kind of starting over again. So if you just take a couple minutes to do an over refraction, the first lens that you get, I think, is going to have a much higher success rate. You wouldn't prescribe glasses off of an auto refractor. You know, I don't know any optometrist that does that. And it's the same thing with contacts. I absolutely think that was just a great analogy. And so I totally think that we should be doing over refractions on every single specialty lens patient.
Let me ask you about specifically about scleral lenses. If your first scleral lens is way off in terms of the fit, and you do an over-refraction, you're going to make a huge change to the fit. Is that okay? Or if you put the first one on its way off, do you recommend making an adjustment and then over-refracting over that one? Or what's your approach there?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think a lot of it does have to do with the lab too, because some of the designs, you know, if you change one parameter, you're changing a lot of other parameters, then it becomes really wonky. In that case, you kind of have to start over or, you know, make the adjustments to the fit first and then worry about the refraction afterwards. But there are some cases where if you're making a small change to the fit, you can add in the over-refraction data that you find. But when you're making these giant changes, let's say you've got 1200 microns of sag you have to change, and you also want to change a mid-peripheral curve, and you want to change the edge. And it's like, it becomes so complicated when you're adding in the over-refraction as well. So I think getting the fit optimize first is always going to be the best thing, and then working on the over refraction if you're going to be making these giant changes. But I guess, Tom, what would you say in your experience with any sort of specialty lens if like you have to make a huge change to the fit?
It's always better to be close, but sometimes you don't have the option. Sometimes you don't have the lens you need, in which case you go ahead and do the high over refraction and send it in, and you kind of use that new second lens as your new starting point. But ideally, you want to get close before you do that over refraction. I agree with you on that. Sometimes problems being experienced with contact lenses are not due to the contact lenses. And lab consultants shared with me that sometimes doctors call to consult when it's clear it's not a contact lens problem to the consultant, that it's something else. What are some of the other things that should be considered when troubleshooting, maybe prior to calling a consultant?
Yes, yeah, so that is it's tough, right? Because a lot of times people just want a quick fix and they think that it's the contact lens that is the issue. But going through their ocular surface, huge. That is a lot of times, it doesn't matter what we do to the contact lens, they're having problems with dryness, irritation, you name it, and it ends up being an underlying ocular surface problem. Their eyelids, the ocular surface, conjunctiva, dry eye, whatever. And so taking a very careful assessment of the health of the eye, I think, is very, very important. And we can't forget to ask patients about their compliance with the actual contact lens itself. So what are they using to clean the lens, store the lens, fill the lens? How are they wearing the lens? You'll be so shocked to find out what patients are doing when you start asking those questions. I can't tell you how many patients over the years that we've given them every single piece of advice as far as how to take care of their lenses, a list of approved products. We've written it down. We've sent them videos of exactly how to take care of the lens. And they come in and they say, oh, I've been storing it in tap water. Or, oh, yeah, I have been using a lens that I had stored away 15 years ago. And I just started using it again. And that's the lens you've been doing all this work on. There's so many things that you need to just take a couple minutes to ask the patient, and because you'll be very shocked to find out, like, oh, it's actually not the contact lens itself. It's either their eyeball or some sort of thing going on, or the way they're taking care of the lens.
Steph, that how you ask is important. Like, I call it no fair leading the witness. In other words, you don't say, okay, now are you using this solution at this time? And, you know, and then all they have to say is, yes. Where if you say, tell me how you're using your solutions, tell me how, you know, have them report to you, not you outline what they should be doing and have them agree or disagree. So no fair leading the witness.
Yeah, or even one of my friends does a thing where they have a picture of the different solutions. They're like, can you just point to the one that you're using? I thought that was brilliant. Then they really can't just say, oh yeah, I'm doing the one that you said. They physically have to point to the one that they're using. So I thought that was kind of a cool trick.
I like that one. Never heard that one. Steph, do you ever reach out to your lab consultant prior to seeing a patient? You see a patient on the schedule, and you get an understanding of what their issue is. Do you ever call the consultant ahead of time? And if so, why? And what's the benefit of doing that?
Yeah, I would say maybe in like 10% of my patients, I will actually email the consultant or call them beforehand. If it's a very complicated patient and I don't really know what to do. So let's say I saw them for a consult and maybe they had tried 10 different lenses before. And I'm like, okay, let's have a good game plan for when they come in. So I'll call the consultant, give them the history, maybe give them their topographies or whatever things that I've done from their prior visits, or maybe from other referral. I can send them information from the other doctor on, like, okay, this is all the things they've exhausted. Let's come up with a game plan before they come in. I think it's really valuable to have a consultant to help kind of structure that so that you're not there and then you're like, oh, okay, well, we tried that and now that didn't work. And now I have no clue what to do from here. A consultant is brilliant because they have so many different tips and tricks up their sleeve where they can say, oh, well, if that doesn't work, try this fitting set or try this thing or do this. They have so many different pieces of advice that you may not think of on the fly. But if you have that conversation prior, then you look like a hero to the patient and you look super smart and that you've done your research.
I think some providers maybe feel intimidated about having such an honest conversation with consultants, but we just got to remember that we're the experts, but they're the experts on their products and the nuances of their products. They work with those particular products all day, every day. And we may not be using that individual product necessarily to that degree. So They love having questions brought to them in advance or in the moment. Don't hesitate to reach out to them and bring all the information you can. Try to be as organized as you can. Do you have any other tips before we sign off, Stephanie, utilizing getting the most out of your lab consultant?
Well, Tom, like you've said, I think a lot of people get intimidated for some reason calling the consultant or, you know, thinking that they don't and maybe have enough time. But I would argue that using the consultant will help you get to the end result a lot faster. I've made the mistake, I don't know about you, Tom, where I didn't use a consultant and I've had to reorder the lens 5 times when if I just used the consultant, it probably would only take 2 other lenses because they know their design the best.
Absolutely. No, I've made that same mistake for sure. For sure. I mean, yeah, history. You learn, but we're trying to help move people forward quickly and not have to go through that learning curve. So jump in, utilize consultants. Dr. Stephanie Wu, thank you so much for your tips on how to utilize a consultant to get the most out of them. Thank you so much for your time and your expertise.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you for listening to GPLI Radio, a member service of the GP Lens Institute. A core element of our mission is to provide you, the eye care community, with unbiased education to realize the full benefits and advantages of GP and custom soft contact lenses. We hope this conversation helped do just that. Be sure to check back for the next installment of GPLI Radio.